Hello. It's 3:15 p.m. on July 6, 2013. This Wujo is a little bit of a catch-up on some things, but also let you know up front I'm recording outside because the huge number of fans going on inside really wouldn't permit it. Plus, it's reasonably nice out here, unless you're a hot little dog. So apparently we're being slammed really from all directions. We've got a lot of gamma ray radiation coming in. We've got a lot of solar errant behavior, or not errant, really. I mean, it's doing its solar thing. It's just not necessarily good for humans if you're unaware of what's happening. So, for instance, there's a lot more ultraviolet coming in now, and you're advised to stay out of the sun between, say, 11 and 3:30 or 4, something like that, depending on where you are in terms of your latitude, because of the angle of incidence will allow more UV of this new type C to penetrate, and it's rather damaging. You can harmonize with it, I've discovered. It's difficult, but you can. Such that it doesn't really burn or that sort of thing. You have to be rather conscious of what you're doing with it. Personally, by the way, I won't ever use any sunscreen or any product that has any kind of SPF business involved. These sun protection factor things, I think, are absurd. Actual statistical evidence is that skin cancer goes up when the use of sunscreens go up. So, it's like, yeah, the sun's changed, but it's changed repeatedly throughout human history. And a lot of different kinds of humans have had to deal with a lot of different kinds of solar input, and we've managed to make it to themselves, and we've managed to make it this far. So, my approach is to, synchronize and harmonize with the sun and get to know this new incarnation of it. In any event, let's see what's going on. All kinds of stuff globally. I'm sure everybody's aware of all of the problems with explodo trains and, fascist government guys going crazy, all of that sort of thing. The moment, one of the things that's most concerning, I think, or should be, is the recent activity on July 5th in Fukushima, where it's reputed that the MOX fuel burned and released plutonium into the atmosphere. This isn't good. A sufficient quantity of plutonium, well atomized and spread throughout the northern hemisphere, essentially means death for all life on the planet. Plant life might survive, and some of the invertebrates might, especially sea animals, but I don't know about none of the rest of us would, plutonium being the way it is. So this is a rather disconcerting event. Also, I didn't really believe it until I've seen the recent evidence of it, but it seems quite true. The Japanese have apparently totally given up on any idea of containment on the radiation leak and dealing with Fukushima. It's like it is suddenly beyond their capacity, as though the people that are dealing with it now are some kind of a... not subspecies, but a degenerate form of human, other than the people that invented the device. It's a stupid design anyway, placed in a bad position, but we've got hundreds of these damn nuclear reactors everywhere. We've got to learn to live with them until we can figure out a way to totally get rid of them and use up all the radiation, which is something I'll talk about in a few minutes. But So the recent release of the MOX fuel into the air is extremely disconcerting. I have a lot of lots and lots of buddies that are sailors, and lots of buddies that are boat builders throughout the islands in the Pacific, and I have friends of mine that work for various different scientific apparatus of the Fascista government up and down the West Coast in what's known euphemistically as Region 10. If you live in it, you know about it. And all these guys that are in the biology business, or that have any measurement capacity at all, or dealing in any way at all with the oceans, are just losing it. Now a lot of the people that are in the wildlife business that are land-based critters are also just starting to lose their minds because their charges, you know, the species they're supposed to be watching out for, are succumbing to the radiation from Fukushima. I get a lot of reports from, and by lot, I mean maybe 30 or 40 in the last, probably 3 months, maybe more, slightly more than that, from people I used to work with that have moved on to other jobs or you know, are vacationing. Like, for instance, a couple of the fisheries guys I know go up every summer and muck about in the islands in the Queen Charlotte's, in the Haida Gwaii country, or further north into the southern Alaska. And this year they took a excursion plane from the mainland and flew into a deeper part of Alaska at a lake for 3 or 4 days, and we're rather shocked at the level of degradation of the wildlife and a lot of degradation of the trees in northern BC. I put that down to the chemtrails myself. They were thinking radiation because they're not really clued in. These guys are not really clued in to all the woo-woo stuff going on, so they were just focused on the Fukushima, and they were thinking maybe the radiation was killing the trees, but I'm pretty sure it's the aluminum poisoning from the chemtrails. Anyway, though, the radiation issue has really affected large land mammals in Alaska, moose and reindeer and polar bears succumbing. It's working its way up through the food chain. The radiation is rather severe by the time it gets to the polar bears and causes them to have terrible cancers. The one that the these two friends of mine were part of an examination of a dead polar bear in autopsy, and it had a spotchy fur, would be the best way to put it. It actually looked like some kind of mutant chupacabra or something. It was very thin. It had a form of wasting disease that was caused by whatever radiation. It was hot, I mean, in the sense that they had a accurate calibrated radiation meter, and they were able to determine that indeed parts of the flesh were giving off a certain level of clicks per minute higher than the rest of the animal or the background radiation. So it had some level of particulate matter lodge in it that probably killed it, but it died actually of this total liver meltdown was how the guy described it. He said that the, you know, liver tissue isn't all that connective to begin with, or all that robust in terms of its connectivity. I really shouldn't even say that. It's not all that structured in terms of the connectivity from our eyes. And he said here it was just a very much a gelatinous mass, and he saw why it had died. And it had all the signs of liver poisoning, white tongue and the foam coming out and that kind of thing. So very bad sign that the radiation has gotten to that point. They saw a number of moose that were affected. No dead moose or anything. They were in the airplane and they saw moose that were just not doing well. And he said you could tell that they were in bad molt. In other words, the molt was strange, because he said that there wasn't just merely new fur. It was totally exposed skin underneath. And they were burning from the sun that was up there. And also, it was hot as hell, he said. Let me see if I can say this without getting him into too much trouble. They had certain gear with them on the airplane ride up. They took some video recording of the readings that were being put out by the gear they took with them. And some of that may be made public. If it does, you'll know at that point who I'm speaking of. But they had a background running on internal and external temperatures. And they were also monitoring ground temperatures while they were there on the ground. And as apparently, at one point, I think I saw a reading of 96 degrees on the ground in Alaska. Not unheard of, but not that common, even this time of the year. Especially where they were at, because they were way to the western edge of the Central Valley there that runs basically north to south. It kind of sweeps up and runs along a major line of mountains that go around the west coast there. And that's they were in this valley area there at a very large lake. There's about 1,000 lakes, so it doesn't betray very much. Anyway, very high temperatures, very sick animals, absence of bird life, absence of two or three other species. One of the guys is rabbit ornithologist, amateur. I mean, he's a biologist by trade, but an ornithologist, you know, a bird watcher guy. He's hooked, and he runs out in funny little shorts in the middle of winter and counts birds on January 1, that kind of thing. Anyway, he was saying that, you know, he was just shocked at the amount of dead silence in areas that should be filled with bird song in the forest. And it really got to him. It just, I mean, it materially affected him. His voice was not doing good as a result of this. Anyway, so there's that on the catch-up there. Might as well go into some of that at the moment, too. Our plans here to build this land ship, which we have on our roundsquarefeet.com site. And the land ship is basically an alternative approach to housing to the Earth ship. And I'm doing an alternative for a number of different reasons. Earth ships are really cool. They use up waste material. They're, you know, solar powered and self-sustaining, and you can even grow your crops on their roofs. For myself, though, they're not nice because I don't like living in holes in the ground. Been there, done that. It wasn't comfortable, so I just won't be doing that again. And I like the idea as a sailor of having my dwelling float above the land for a bunch of different reasons, especially an earthquake zone. So the idea is that we'll build our platform so that it's rigid unto itself, but that it has a freedom of movement on the poles that will be suspending it above the ground. So it'll just kind of rock in the case of earthquakes. It's very cheap. We're going to eliminate vast quantities of money involved in building by not involving ourselves in the cement trades. Or minimally so, if at all. The pole building structures have a history that goes back well over 1400 years. In fact, I think there's even some that go back in Germany 400 or 500 years BC. So that we're in a situation with a proven technology that's low cost, and we're going to upgrade it and enhance it and improve it and see where we go there. Now, one of our goals here is to set up basically what's going to amount is a 10X Labs, 10X Laboratory. Our actual company name here is 10X, and that comes from a Latin phrase, 10X Propositae, which means firmness of resolve or commitment to the principle involved. Basically, it's a shorthand for commitment. In for a penny, in for a pound, what's the rest of that saying? Everybody buy a round before we're hung and drowned. Something like that. I mean, I can't remember. It's an old pirate shanty that basically speaks to commitment and loyalty. And so 10X Propositae is the phrase from which we derive our business name. We've been 10X since 1983. A lot of my patents are under that. Patent work is under that name. And it's basically a laboratory for experiments. And so we're going to set up our new lab at our new Earthship. And one of the things we're going to do is to hopefully be able to set up things like webcams and keep them running and connected as we install scientific apparatus all over the place. And I want to do things like basically my goal, the short-term mission statement, you might say, is that 10X Labs is going to focus the next few years on thinking about bioremediation of radiation with a specific emphasis on the marine environment. And so that's our short-term mission statement, is that we're going to work on getting rid of the radiation, ways to get rid of the radiation out of the ocean through harmonizing with what the Earth provides us in the way of critters and, processes and such. And so we're going to set up a lab. I've got a guy here that we'll call Kale. He's one of the two fellows, Kale and Lettuce, that used to work for me on boat building. And Kale's back helping me finish out the proa so that I can get it out of the boat shed and we can stick the yurts in there temporarily while Kale and I go and build the platform upon which to then assemble the yurts and then assemble the rest of our lab over there. We have to move our boat shed, which is basically a big tent anyway. It's one of those RV kind of house things, about 45 feet long, polyester or vinyl cover. I don't know which. I don't think it's vinyl. It's insulated and so on. And we'll relocate our the boat shed over there as well as all of our science gear. I've got a number of science stations here. I have a operational a solar observatory I built in the early 2000s I want to shift over. And then we're going to just basically set up webcams so that anybody and everybody can tap in and get the results of this. And then I'm training Kale to do lab work in the sense of being a lab technician. And we're going to start training him in physical oceanography and analyses for working our way towards analyses for radioactive impacts in the local marine environment. And so that's fundamentally where we're headed with the new roundsquarefeet.com situation, is to examine all different kinds of things for housing, basically rebuilding our environment here because of the changes to the planet. Now, we're shifting our focus. It's gradual because we haven't got land. I'm going to have to store these yurts for I don't know how long and then transport several tons of yurt material through, greater Western Washington to wherever we're going to relocate at. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But our progress will be slow on that. I don't think it'll be accomplished until maybe this time next year. It'll probably take us a year to get everything shifted and settled in, so to speak. A lot of work there. We're going to set up cams for stop motion so that we can capture the whole process of building the new land ship, which is going to be our version of, or our alternative to Earth ships. Probably be more expensive to build ours, although if you built your own yurt, it wouldn't be that expensive. Our approach, but a lot of that's going to be because we're going to incorporate things like solar heating for the floors and explore that in this area and move over all of our solar electric stuff. And so it's a fairly expensive proposition to relocate all of the 10X lab stuff there. Like I say, we're going to focus on bioremediation of radiation. I have a reason to suspect that the data is providing me certain clues and the ways and means towards that, and I'm pursuing those. One thing I want to note is that if we get a situation this year of a red tide on the coast, this will be in the next ALTA report. Interpret the red to be as rad, as in the sense of radioactive, because of the dinoflagellate that will be involved. It will have a tendency to concentrate not only toxins but also radioactivity. And so if we are correct, this red rad tide will have a huge and devastating impact on the food chain on the west coast of the Americas, both north and south, although not way down into South America, much more from the Gulf of Alaska down to about, just a little south of Ecuador. Treat it very seriously, because as these smaller critters in the ocean go swimming around and collect the radiation, they get et by bigger critters, which get et by bigger critters, and pretty soon the radiation is concentrated into those parts of the big critters that you get in your McHappy meal things, you know, that kind of a deal. So I really do suspect there's a real risk of a radiation / food poisoning outbreak if we see this red tide. So if you see it anywhere on the West Coast, by that time, I bet you that there will be radiation into the seafood-based food part of the protein food chain for humans. So say that the red tide was announced, the 10th of August or something. Under those circumstances, you wouldn't want to eat any food, seafood that had been processed, I wouldn't want to eat anything anyway out of the Pacific Ocean simply because of the radiation levels. But if you were taking that risk and weren't too worried about it, it would maybe be, say, the 15th of July, something like that, about three quarters of a month before the red tide comes out, because our data suggests that by the time the red tide is announced, the people will have already had the opportunity to consume some of the radiation-tainted seafood. So, and it's going to be sort of an interesting and different kind of a red tide anyway, in terms of the dinoflagellate that's involved and the concentration of the toxins and the kind of disease that will be suspected. And I suspect it will be somewhere around the 8th to the, say, 20th of August if it's going to occur. That just seems to be the indication we've got based on our lunar calendar. Back to the 10X Labs thing. That's one thing we're attempting to do is we're attempting to use the data we've got that may suggest successful or more successful ways to approach things like bioremediation of the planet. And the reason that we're doing this shift over into round square feet over the course of this next year is because basically I think that we've won in terms of the revolution. It hasn't started yet, but it cannot not start at this stage. We've passed certain thresholds, and there are too many people that are too awake and too rabid and vocal about it for the revolution not to occur. So this is very similar to the situation in the United States in 1770, probably 72 or so, when we crossed a certain threshold of up to about 3% of the population that basically just said, oh, this king's got to go. You know, he's a crazy fucker, and his whole family are crazy fuckers, and we've just had it with these bastards, and we got to get rid of them. Plus, there were all these, you know, rich, wealthy white guys that wanted to steal the country away from the king. They were led by George Washington. They took advantage of this popular sentiment. And at that point, the revolution was bound to occur, and it was bound to enter into a war. Now, whether or not that war had been successful, note that the revolution would have still been successful regardless. If the American Revolutionary War had not finished up and completed the way it did, and say that the British had sent an overwhelming force and garrisoned the country, there would have been another tension point 8 years later, 12 years later, 14 years later, and at that point the Revolutionary War would have been successful. But the revolution would have begun and had been successful once we'd crossed a certain percentage of the total population that was convinced it must occur. And I believe that we've crossed that globally now relative to the banker occupation. And we have people like Max Kaiser to thank and David Icke and just innumerable others who've really worked their butts off for this to happen. And I see the percentages have shifted. I see the actions occurring globally. It's going to continue. The people that are involved are rabid now because they're getting some success. So it's making them even more ferocious about this and more outspoken. And success will beget success. And then we'll have more popular uprisings that are more successful and so on. And so our global insurrection against occupation by the fucktard banksters and the powers that be will engage itself in a form of global warfare. Not as we think of it in terms of World War III, but rather global insurrection. Now, because that is going to occur, I'm starting to think already about what will come on the other side of that, because we're going to have to shift away from central power. We're going to do away with all the central banks on the planet because they're an aberration and just a method for raping the people on behalf of the powers that be, and they're not necessary. We're going to move to vast quantities of decentralized, different approaches, many of which will fail. And that's the beauty of it, is that those that don't fail will be strong and they'll be robust and they'll be adopted by those people who've had their paradigms shift and fail. And so we'll grow in this rapid, not even lockstep, but exponential shift of feedback loops within feedback loops, feeding back into other loops, etc., as we start progressing into a decentralized world. Decentralization is where our strength lies. The more volatility we have, the better we're off, because we are creatures that benefit from volatility and change. And the more volatility we have, the more volatility we will create, and the more creative we will become in creating our volatility, and off we go into even further reaches. And so at some point we cross a threshold and it just goes whoosh from that point on, and we're really close to that. I don't know if it's in my lifetime, but it might be really close to within my lifetime occurring, in which there will have a creative renaissance that will knock the socks off of everybody alive for, say, the next 300 or 400 years, and then maybe we'll get used to it. It's going to be that exceptional. So one of the things I'm starting to do is to consider a lot of these things. We have to get rid of the radiation. We got to start cleaning up the oceans. We've got to deal with the species unnamed, unknown, but known to be there, intelligent hominids with gills that are water breathers, that are tool users and have technology that may be as terrestrial as we are, and they inhabit the bottom of the oceans. And so we're going to have to come to grips with this and learn to deal with it. More on that in the next Alter report as well. Much of this sort of stuff is within our ability now to start thinking about, not planning for, and bearing in mind that any kind of a plan I made is A, an invitation for universe to laugh every time I show it to it, but also B, a purely my own aberration in fantasy about how the world should work, and I suspect or would expect that no one else should adopt my approaches to things because it wouldn't work for them and they've got to do their own. And that's where our genius as a species lie. We're like a vast quantity of neural nets that are self-monitoring, and the best of us, not even self-aware in the worst of us, but that can change. As a vast quantities of interacting neural nets, the exponential, logarithmically exponential, capacity for creative change is truly mind-blowing. I mean, while the universe is, beyond our ability to conceive, there is nothing in our ability to conceive that we cannot achieve. And so, we're going to get into a huge renaissance, a revolutionary period here. And that's basically what our round square feet approach is. We're going to go back to where we once belong, get ourselves sort of centered into what it means to be human, and then start approaching things differently. So, for instance, here at 10X, my recent explorations in reading are involving in-depth study of invertebrates, zoology, going back to my roots in physical oceanography, exploring very well-written thinking on Taoist Qi medicine, also known as traditional Chinese medicine. At the same time, I'm looking into their counterpart in Ayurvedic medicine, and we're examining some of the pathways that were left unexplored with the removal of Nikola Tesla. So one of the things I want to do is I'm going to put together a crowdfunding proposal for this energy device I want to build. I've got the basic materials here. I've been able to get people to gift me some really weird stuff, such as I got 62.5 pounds of piezoelectric crystal in a particular form. And we're going to muck about with this thing chemically and then reconstitute it in an energy device that we hope will transmit usable amounts of electricity, probably in the range of micro amperage, but nonetheless continuous based on movement. And so waste movement in factories, shopping malls, and all of this kind of thing will be able to be picked up and converted to electricity used in, you know, right at that place, you know, charging devices or put onto the grid or whatever. Further, the device itself, already the initial prototype shows a real interesting side benefit of helping dampen a resonant frequency propagation. So if you have an area that's suffering from too many people walking and the structure is building up a frequency and getting into the dangerous area just based on how people are walking across it, a la the galloping Gertie Tacoma Narrows Bridge that got into one of those situations with wind, then you could use these devices dampen out that motion, as well as at the same time pick up electricity, usable levels of electricity from it. And then we're going to hook up with this group, we hope this group of interstellar aliens that has set itself up in Las Vegas, Nevada, that has a 3D printer. And this interstellar outfit is going to maybe do a little prototype for us of this structure that I've designed that we're going to have Kale investigate as a active kinetic energy generating device. In other words, you would just incorporate this into clothing, specific kinds and places and so on. And then as you moved around, you generate enough electricity to keep your cell phone running without its battery. Who knows how much you may be able to generate just by sitting around fidgeting. We just don't know. But the early tests on it show that it really does work very well. Again, it's a piezoelectric device. We need some cell structure things created for us probably nylon, but in any event, we'll get into that later. I'm going to put together this crowdfunding proposal. I'll drop it on either Kickstarter or Indiegogo because I want to try that mechanism to fund this particular operation, with the idea being that the money would be used to purchase materials and to set up a lab structure away from our living quarters on the new property, in which we could safely explore electrical issues without involving ourselves in the circuitry. And also be able to employ Cale. He's a really good worker and works his ass off. And a formerly homeless kid, when I first encountered him, I mean, it's a kind of an interesting story. He was living in a homemade wickiup, illegally on some state land, and really rough life, et cetera, et cetera. Totally turned his life around and is a, you know, a productive, awake and aware citizen attempting to, you know, help the planet and fuck the fascistas. So we're going to do this on one of those two, Kickstarter or Indiegogo, and I'll write up how the results go and all of that sort of thing and let you know, because that alone is an interesting experiment, just to have a perspective of going through that process. Probably we're not going to be shooting for that much money. I just need to keep him employed for a couple of months on these, and then we'll the results of this first round, unfortunately, probably won't be a device per se, although we may have several prototypes by that point. Probably at the end of the results of the first round of funding would just be a whole series of graphs and data about how various different prototypes failed to work, because we're still in that stage. And I don't know if either of those two funding sources are adequate or good for this particular process. I'll just have to investigate those. We've got a lot of stuff going on here. Trying to get all of this done, trying to find property. One of the things we're doing is to try and find neglected property to remediate as part of the movement of the land ship into it, and also to show that it's possible to site a really cool house without involving yourself with vast quantities of machinery ripping the guts out of the earth. In order to do so, you don't need a level spot to build a house on. If you go about it the right way, it's even far cheaper. And so that's one of the things is we're looking, and I'm unfortunately in the situation where I'm looking for waterfront to Puget Sound or Hood Canal so that we can set up this marine remediation study that we're going to have to do. And it's going to take a couple of years, maybe 4 or 5 really, because of the species I'm going to have to investigate. I've got some ideas on what might work and an approach to it all. But a lot of experimentation there, but I need daily access to the in the water kind of experiments, and I need it in a way that, you know, I won't be hassled by officialdom for what I'm going to do. I'm not going to screw around with the planet. I'm actually just merely going to put in sensor arrays in particular ways to pick up on specific changes relative to ongoing conditions that I'll be monitoring from Fukushima and other areas. And I don't want to get any more specific about that. Anyway, I guess that'll about do it for this. I've got 3 batches of resin I got on today, and I had Cale in there sanding or removing wire from our habitat on the proa. Now, these little wires are what tie it all together while you put little bits of fiberglass tape and resin on to hold it together, and then you get back and you sand the hell out of it, and you put all kinds of fiberglass cloth and resin all over it. And you end up with this hard little eggshell kind of thing. Anyway, and so we're in that process. We've got a month from today before the yurts are going to ship, and we've got to get the boat weather tight and out of the shed, and the AMA, same there. And then actually we're going to rig it up and go do some sailing experiments in August while we're hunting for land. And I've been invited to do a talk at Port Townsend at the wooden boat deal this year, if I can sail my ass up there, and I may well do that. Cale is thinking maybe he can take a couple of days away from his family obligations and sail up with me, and we might do a serious shakedown cruise and sail up to Port Townsend and rattle on for a little while about a few things and a talk, and then nosh on some food and sail back the next day and take our experiments on the road, so to speak. Anyway, that's the plan at the moment. Universe is laughing. It's chuckling. I can hear it in the background. It's an old Buddhist saying, but I think it applies to anybody. You know, you want to make universe laugh, show it your plan. So anyway, There we are, guys, you know, planet Earth under attack, space aliens are due any day now, that kind of thing. Rampaging government gone batshit with its head so far up its ass it can see itself. And situation normal, all fucked up, and it's up to us to change that. And I sure as hell ain't waiting for any change I can believe in. Thank you. Talk to you guys later.